So my purpose here really is to provide a context for what you're about to hear from veteran civil rights activists Staunton Lind and Professor Vincent Harding and Mumia. And I think this is a propitious moment really to be talking about dissent in American history, given what's happening in the world, given that the nation is amidst war. And it's an interesting conversation to be talking about John Brown and interracial struggle, especially in the context of one of the worst catastrophes, one of the worst social catastrophes in American history, the consequences of Hurricane Katrina and what that taught Americans about race and class in the United States and its legacy. John Brown is one of America's more famous anti-slavery figures. Although the radical abolitionist is often referred to as a terrorist, his actions and tactics are more in line with those of guerrilla warfare. John Brown is best known for his violent execution of five pro-slavery settlers in Kansas at a time when the inhabitants of Kansas and Nebraska were engaged in fierce battles over whether these Western states would be admitted to the Union as free states or slave states. The crisis out west was further inflamed by a conflict over the location of the Transcontinental Railroad, which, as we all know, was the motor force, if you will, the engine of the quickly expanding northern industrial economy. John Brown is also known for his anti-slavery raid at Harper's Ferry on October 16, 1859, where he led 21 black and white men in an armed occupation of a federal arsenal depot. His aim was to seize the arsenal, arm slaves, and lead a liberation struggle in the South that would culminate in the building of a black republic in the Appalachian Mountains. John Brown drew inspiration for his raid from the Haitian Revolution, and more importantly, from homegrown slave rebels such as Gabriel, Denmark Vesey, and Nat Turner. He was also inspired by black abolitionists such as David Walker and Henry Highland Garnett, who had called for armed resistance against slavery and whose famous pamphlets Brown paid to be published in 1948. John Brown was also very influenced by the life struggles of Frederick Douglass and Frederick Douglass's escape from slavery. John Brown was a deeply religious man. He was born into a deeply religious family in Torrington, Connecticut, and his father was vehemently opposed to slavery. Even though critics of Brown point to his obsessive religiosity as a fanaticism that eventually led him in a blind and violent pursuit of an ideal without concern for its consequences or effectiveness, the fact is that Brown's life reflected an amalgam of social currents already present in American society. And these currents were religious, reformist, racial, and political. In many ways, part of what historians agree upon now is that John Brown was not an aberration. Although he is maligned by his detractors as a bad and dishonest businessman gone broke who tried to find purpose and fame at the expense of slaves, his business failures and chronic indebtedness were increasingly common among small farmers who could not weather the storm of the brutal boom and bust cycles of early American capitalism. These developments in the economy, early economy of American capitalism, and Brown's strong religious beliefs in many ways fueled his fight for the weak, the downtrodden, slaves and workers, and his advocacy of, quote, cooperative industry as a way to combat, quote, the evils of capitalism. So in many ways, Brown's ideas, if not his actions, reflected the ideas of the utopian socialists of his time. Most importantly, Brown's political analysis of the state of government and the power of the slaveocracy accurately reflected actual developments in the United States. In John Brown's analysis, only a violent insurrection could abolish slavery. He held fast to his conviction that since slavery itself was a state of war, it could be combated only through warfare. Most importantly, he understood that the slave system was entrenched and therefore impervious to peaceful tactics, negotiations, or moral suasion. He argued that the United States government was dominated by the slaveholding South, and in many ways, John Brown was right. Of the 16 presidents elected in America between 1788 and 1848, all but four were Southern slaveholders. The slaveholders' power in many ways stemmed from the Constitution's provision that three-fifths of the slave population would be counted in determining a state's representation in Congress and allocation of electoral votes. The slaveocracy's domination of government and the continued expansion of slavery into new territories was a profound impediment for the vastly growing needs of Northern capital and its transatlantic railroad. Whereas Northern capital had earlier required slavery at its inception, it was now an obstacle. Slavery, the system of slavery, was now an obstacle to its full development and maturation, to the full development and maturation of Northern capital and industry. So essentially, there was an irreconcilable conflict in America on the eve of the Revolution between the slave system and the system of free labor in the North of industry, a conflict that would only be resolved through violent civil war. At issue, however, when we talk about John Brown's life and his legacy, are questions of strategy and tactics. Despite Brown's racial egalitarianism and devotion to black liberty, he completely concealed his intended insurrection at Harper's Ferry from those who were expected to support the insurrection and join him, i.e., slaves. Moreover, he assumed that this would be a natural, that there would be a natural outpouring of fighters for his movement. And in many ways, he terribly underappreciated the need for organization. John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry was quickly thwarted. Most of his men were killed or captured. One of his men escaped and actually wrote about it, his experience and his relationship with John Brown. And two of his black men were hanged with him on December 2nd, 1859, on the eve of the Civil War. One of his most potent legacies, however, was brilliantly captured by Frederick Douglass. And that legacy really is the legacy of interracial struggle in America and a genuine commitment among some whites to join African Americans unequivocally toward their liberation. And this is what Frederick Douglass had to say about John Brown in 1947. Though a white gentleman, Brown is in sympathy a black man, and as deeply interested in our cause as though his own soul had been pierced by the iron of slavery. And this is the subject, really, of the rest of tonight's debate and conversation between the audience, Staunton Lind, Vincent Harding, and Mumia Abu-Jamal. And before I pass the microphone over to Staunton Lind, I want to talk a little bit about him. I teach 20th century U.S. history, in particular the history of the civil rights movement. And I just want to say that American society is what it is today, in part because of people like Vincent Harding and Staunton Lind. Staunton Lind was the director of the Freedom Schools that were launched by the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in the early 1960s, essentially schools that sought to teach African-American children in the South their history when the segregationist South essentially kept black children out of schools once desegregation was outlawed. If we are sitting in this university today, black, white, Latino together, it is because of the sacrifices of civil rights veterans and the fact that they decided to stand on the right side of justice. And I just want to welcome Staunton Lind. And Staunton Lind will also later introduce Vincent Harding, another giant of the civil rights movement, who was an associate of Martin Luther King, who's written a number of books, is a professor emeritus in a theological seminary in Colorado, and another just incredible activist and leader that helped transform American society. So without further ado, Staunton Lind.